I'm very, very honored to be with you this morning and deeply grateful to have an opportunity to talk about these two readings. A quick reading through the entire Bible might give one the idea that most women in the Bible are only ancillary to the story. In fact, the word ancillary is from the Latin word for servant, specifically a female maid servant. That very word intrigued me when I was pondering the readings for this Sunday. One could argue with a great deal of accuracy, I think, that the reason women in the Bible seem to be ancillary is that the Bible is patriarchal. Or shall we say, it appears to be patriarchal from the point of view of those persons of the masculine persuasion who in fact historically wrote down the stories, told the stories, and were central to the stories. The question is, does the Bible have meaning and validity because of who wrote down the words and their gender and their place in history? Or does the story have meaning and validity in and of itself, story as the story? Case in point. In 1611, James I of England, who was formerly James VI, the King of Scotland, before the two crowns, the two countries were united in 1603, shortly before Santa Fe came into being, by the way, that was 1610, so that's our place in history, temporary time speaking. James I authorized a translation of the Bible from the Hebrew of the Old Testament and the Greek of the New Testament into English. It was known as the King James Authorized Version. Now, the truth is that most of the King James Version was borrowed from an earlier biblical scholar by the name of William Tyndale. Tyndale had been the first person to translate the Bible from the Hebrew and Greek scriptures into English in 1534. But he was declared to be a heretic by the church. Why? Because he dared to translate the Bible into English. Why? So that the Bible would be accessible to the common English-speaking person. However, this was something the church had strictly forbidden. Tyndale also dared to challenge and criticize Henry VIII over his divorce and other scandalous behavior, but that's another part of the story. So it happened that 2 years later, after his Bible came out in secret, but spread through the land, 2 years later, in 1536, in Antwerp, Belgium, Tyndale was arrested, imprisoned, tied to a stake, strangled, and burned to death by the church. Here's the scandal. 3/4 of a century later, the very church which had condemned Tyndale and his Bible took nearly everything of what Tyndale had translated, which the church had condemned, and reproduced it as the King James Version. The Bible with which, looking around, I think many of us, perhaps most of us, grew up with in church and Sunday school and read and studied. Here's an excursus. I always have an excursus in my sermon. Here is one. When Beverly and I moved into our current residence in the Life Plan community at La Sequoia in Santa Fe one day during lunchtime. One of our neighbors, whose name is Patricia, came up to me and said, "You're a Lutheran pastor, correct?" I said, "Yes, I am." Holding up two large volumes, newly printed, she said, "I want to give these to you." I took the books gratefully, and reading the covers, I said, "You realize you are giving me heretical versions of the Bible." Because this was Tyndale's translation in modern spelling. She smiled and said, "Yes, they belong to my husband, who had passed away, and he was a descendant of the Tyndale family. These volumes in modern spelling in English of Tyndale's translation are two of my most precious possessions." My point in all this seeming digression is that what or who may seem to be ancillary is rather right at the center of things. We need to pay attention. We need to open our minds and our hearts. So I entitled this sermon, "A Tale of Three Women." It's the story of Sarah, Mary, and Martha. First, the story of Sarah, wife of Abraham, which we find in Genesis 18, and the story of the two sisters, Mary and Martha, whom we find in the 10th chapter of the Gospel according to Luke. I contend that these women are at the very center of the story. In fact, I would say central to the story. The first story takes place near the Oaks of Mamre, we read, which refers to an ancient religious site originally focused on a single holy tree that had been there forever and is growing at Hebron, which is now in the West Bank of the State of Israel. There is a Greek Orthodox monastery which was founded at the very spot that we're talking about, where this ancient tree was planted or grew up. It fell over in 2019, but there's a young sprig of that tree growing up next to it. Thus goes the story. The very elderly Abraham and very elderly Sarah, husband and wife, pitched their tent by this tree. Abraham sitting at the entrance of the tent in the middle of the day, and suddenly three people appear, three men. From the text, it's either God or angels or maybe both. Abraham, according to the custom of hospitality, rushes over to them, asks them to wash their feet, rest in the shade of the tree, and have some bread. The men agree. Abraham rushes into the tent and insists upon his wife that she quickly bake three cakes of flatbread. Then he tells his servant to slaughter a calf, have it roasted. Then he takes the meat, the flatbread, some cheese and milk, we presume goat cheese and goat milk, and rushes over to the men, sets the food before them, and stands over them watching as they eat. Munching on the meat, flatbread, and cheese, washing it all down with milk, one of the three asks, "Where's your wife, Sarah?" Abraham says, "She's in the tent." Then one of them, maybe the same one, says, "I'll be back in 9 months, and Sarah will give birth to a son." Now that's where the reading for this Sunday, according to the lectionary, was supposed to end. But that's not the end of the story, and so I had Karen read the rest to have it included this morning. Sarah's inside the tent, listening to all of this conversation. She and Abraham are very old. She's beyond menopause. She can't have any more children. She hasn't had any children. So she laughs to herself, "My husband is old, I'm old. Really? A baby?" Outside and within hearing range, God says, "Why did Sarah laugh?" I will indeed return in 9 months, and you will indeed have a son. Now that would be a good ending right there. But there's more. We call it the denouement. Sarah denies everything. I did not laugh. She's afraid. God said, oh yes, you did laugh. And 9 months later, a son is born, and they name him Yitzhak, in Hebrew, which means he will laugh. Sarah, you see, is not ancillary to the story. She's at the very core of the story. We might say she is the story. I would say that. Without Sarah, there is no Yitzhak, no Isaac. Without Isaac, there's no Jacob. Without Jacob, there is eventually no King David. And without King David, there is eventually no Yeshua Emmanuel, Jesus. And without Jesus, there are no followers of Jesus. That would mean there's no us. There's no church. That brings us to the next story, which in many ways is a story for all of us who are either attention deficit disordered or obsessive compulsive. Or both. Mary and Martha. One of you is wearing the name tag Martha, and so I want to acknowledge that. And thank you for, yes. This is not directed totally at you, but to all of us. Mary and Martha, two sisters, have a house in a certain village. The village is not named. This is a story in the Gospel according to Luke. There's a similar but not exact story in the later Gospel of John, where we learn that this is the home of Lazarus, Mary and Martha, all related to each other. That's a different story. Martha is in charge. She invites Jesus to come in. She is hospitable according to the custom. Just like Sarah, centuries before, she prepares food and such. While she's doing this, she notices that her sister Mary is not helping. Rather, Mary is sitting at the feet of Jesus, listening to every word he's speaking. Martha is annoyed. The gospel writer Luke puts it this way, in Greek, of course, Martha, perispato peri polein diakonion. So Martha, peri means around. Spato means to drag around, literally. Perispato means to be distracted, dragging around a lot of things. Peri, around. Polein, many things. Diakonion. We get the word deacon from this, and diakonia. It means service or serving. So Martha is dragging around many things in her serving. That's what one does when company comes. Martha explodes. Jesus, do you not care that my sister? That's what she calls her in Luke's Greek. Adelphe mou, sister of me, literally. You could translate it in a whining moon, this sister of mine. Do you not care that she has left me with all the work? Tell her to help me. Now, I cannot hear, read, or even think about the next part without calling to mind Father Eddie O'Byrne of blessed memory, a great Irish priest, died many years ago, that great Irish priest who was the chaplain of the old St. Vincent Hospital in Santa Fe when Beverly and I moved there in 1975. Father O'Byrne loved this story from Luke's Gospel, and frequently used it, whether it was appointed or not, in the homilies that he preached at the masses he celebrated in the chapel at the hospital. I have to say that many of our neighbors attended his masses rather than going to the cathedral or any of the other churches in Santa Fe. So beloved was this priest, and he was. He would tell the story many times because it was his favorite, and when he came to the part where Jesus responds to the criticizing Martha, he would say in his Irish brogue, "Martha, Martha, you are worried and distracted by so many things." Then Jesus responds, as we know, "Few things really matter, but one does. And Mary has chosen that one thing, and that will never be taken away from her." What's the one thing? Jesus? Yes. But not Jesus alone. The message, the words, the story, the whole thing that began in Sarah. Be alert, be open, listen, hear, believe. Believe the story. It's a story of love and forgiveness and hope and rescue from sadness and despair, not just here and now, but in the endless love of God. And not just in the endless love of God, but here and now. Now here's the thing. Nearly every sermon I've ever heard has elevated Mary, who sits and listens, and lowered, to use a kind word, Martha, who runs around serving and such. That's not the gospel. The gospel is, it's not just Mary, it's Mary and Martha. Both are essential. Now, I consulted with my theological and biblical consultant, Chris Erickson, concerning this. She told me, I think she's biased, she told me, "We know when reading the story that Martha is Scandinavian." That's what Martha does. That's what Martha's behaving this way, because what she does, she frets and worries until everyone is served. I agree. Just as without Sarah there is no story, so without Martha there is no story. In fact, there's no gospel without her. There's no gospel without Mary. The gospel, the good news, is that everyone is needed. Everyone is necessary. Everyone have a role to play. Tasks to perform. Period. Anything less is not the gospel. So laughter in the face of what seems impossible, belief in the midst of what is distracting, serving in the midst of a conversation, it's all part of following Jesus. It's all a part of love of God and love of neighbor. And when we put it that way, it is all part of being who we are, who we are called to be. And that is the church. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen.